at some later time to hear a better lesson. And to our members, I promise this is not a coup. You didn't give me one.
Okay.
This is not a coup to take Kent's job. Kent does a great job, and I'm very appreciative that we have him. Are you bringing me a mic, or are you just going to turn this one on? Yeah, I'll stay back behind. Okay, so we're good. All right, first of all, let me just say that I'm thankful that I was born, and I'm appreciative of the fact that I have the opportunity to experience God's creation. And if you look at the slide, you see a picture of our earth. And there's a lot of things that I'm also thankful of. I'm thankful that when I get up in the morning and I roll over, I see my beautiful wife beside me, regardless if she has makeup on or not. I'm also thankful that I have the opportunity to sit under a tree in the spring in the morning and hear a turkey gobble. I also enjoy the smell of home-baked cookies. And if you ask my mom or my wife, they'll tell you that I have a better sense of smell for that than sharks do of blood in the water. So I'm also thankful, or I enjoy a good steak. And I enjoy the feel of the first cool breeze in the fall. Those are just some of the things I'm thankful for. I'm sure that all of you have things that you are thankful for as well. We enjoy different things in this earth because God has given us senses. You know, he's given us the sense of sight, hearing, smell, taste, and feel. If we didn't have these senses, think how difficult it would be to function in this life. We had a gentleman that used to worship here when he was alive, Kenneth Phillips. And Kenneth was born with sight but lost it at a young age. And it was very difficult for him to maneuver in an area that he was not familiar with. He either had to be very cautious or have someone lead him around. Think what would happen if we didn't have the ability to hear. If you couldn't use a telephone, if you couldn't listen to a radio, if you know, it would be very difficult to communicate. If you couldn't taste, you know, eating would be a chore, and maybe that's a good thing because maybe that would be a way to lose a few pounds. But eating would not be as fun as it is now. The sense of smell, we use smell for a lot of things, you know, to tell if food is good or not. I know you have those little use-by tags on the or labels on the food. I don't go by those. I use the smell test. If it smells okay, then I eat it. And then, you know, also if you didn't have the ability to feel, think how difficult it would be to even walk around. How many times have you ever had an arm, one of your arms go to sleep, or if you ever tried to walk with your leg asleep, which I've done once or twice, that can be an experience. So anyway, those things are very, very important to us, senses. But what happens when we choose not to use our senses intentionally? Like in this case, what happens when we have eyes that do not see and we have ears that do not hear? Even though they may work perfectly, are we using them and interpreting the way God wants us to? In Ezekiel, the 12th chapter, it says, "The word of the Lord also came unto me, saying, Son of man, thou dwellest in the midst of a rebellious house, which have eyes to see and see not, they have ears to hear and hear not, and they are a rebellious house." And then in Jeremiah, the 5th chapter, verse 21, it says, "Hear this, you foolish and senseless people, who have eyes but do not see, who have ears but do not hear." There are several passages like that. In this case, both of these passages are referring to Israel and how they left God and started following after idols. But then we also find a similar passage in Mark, the 4th chapter, verses 10 through 12. This is directly after Jesus had given the parable of the sower. And it says, "And when he was done, they were about him with the 12, ask of him the parable. And he said unto them, Unto you it is given to know the mystery of the kingdom of God, but unto them that are without, all these things are done in parables, that seeing they may see and not perceive, and hearing they may hear and not understand, lest at any time they should be converted and their sins should be forgiven them." You know, Jesus spoke in parables as a way of teaching those people who really wanted to understand what he was trying to say, while as having other people who didn't care and did not want to hear what his true word was, just hearing empty words, basically, stories. All right, so why do some men choose not to see or hear? Well, because basically sometimes we have a very short-term memory. It's kind of like we're under the assumption, what have you done for me lately? And we can look at this as an example. We can see some of the signs given to Israel. You know, think about when the Hebrews were held captive in Egypt. They were in there for roughly around 400 years. And the first part of that stay was fine. Everything was going good. Joseph was still alive, as well as the Pharaoh. Things were going fine. But once Joseph passed away and they brought in other pharaohs, they did not look upon Israel the same way as the previous regime did. So they were there. They were eventually turned into slaves. And so when Moses came to deliver them, he did several things. Well, first of all, he showed them the 10 plagues. And if you think of all the plagues that occurred, you had the water turning to blood. You had the plague of frogs, flies. I probably have these out of order, but locusts. You had darkness. You had disease that were on the livestock. You had boils. All of these things occurred because God allowed it to happen. And it wasn't until the very 10th plague, where it was the firstborn of every Egyptian passed away, that Pharaoh finally relented and said, okay, you can leave. Well, as the Israelites left Egypt and were on their way to the Promised Land, Pharaoh had a change of heart. So they got up to the Red Sea, and all the Israelites were complaining. It's like, it would have been better for us to stay in Egypt and be servants of the Egyptians rather than to perish here out in the wilderness. But, God was prepared. So through Moses, he allowed the parting of the Red Sea. And then you think about other things that happened during their journey. They were guided by a cloud during the day, and they were guided by a fire at night. I'm not sure how that exactly happened, but God provided it so that it would give them guidance. I mean, it was something very unusual that they should have realized, that God is on our side. And then finally, several miracles or several things took place during their journey that also showed that God was on their side. They started murmuring not too long after the journey began, saying they were going to die of thirst, so water was provided. Then they complained that they were going to die of hunger, so manna was provided. Then they got tired of manna and said, we can't live on manna. We need something else. So God provided them quail. So all these things happened, showing that, God's power and God's part in their release. Yet there came to a point that they still did not really believe that God was on their side. They kind of forgot all of those things that happened. When they finally got to the Promised Land, which is really not that far away, if you think about it. The distance from Cairo, Egypt, to Jerusalem is only 318 miles. So if you were walking that by yourself and you were putting in around 20 miles a day, you could be there in just a couple weeks. I'm sure it took much longer, but not that much longer, if you think about the fact that they had to take into account, elderly people. They had livestock they had to bring with them and so forth. So we're talking at most maybe a 2 or 3 month journey to get from Egypt to the Promised Land. Yet they get there, and instead of going right in, they send spies to kind of check out the land, and 10 of the 12 spies come back and say, no, it's impossible for us to take over this land because the people are too big and they're too many for us to be able to take them over. Only two people, Joshua and Caleb, said, no, we can do this with God's help. But yet the people said, no, we're going to listen to the 10, and we're not going to take God into account. And because of that, they had to spend 40 more years wandering in the wilderness. Okay, another reason that we sometimes don't see or hear the way we should is because of pessimism or lack of faith. Another example that we're all familiar with is David and Goliath. And I know you've heard this story numerous times, but to just go over a little bit about Goliath, he was approximately 10 feet in height. It says that he was 6.5 cubits, which is just slightly under 10 feet. He also had body armor that weighed 150 pounds. That's a lot of weight to carry. I went hiking with my daughter Shanley on the Appalachian Trail a few years ago, And I think my backpack weighed between 40 or 50 pounds, and it was a lot to carry. I could only imagine carrying three times that amount of weight trying to maneuver. That's a lot of weight. And then also you look at his weapon that he had. He had a spear whose point weighed almost 20 pounds. And if you take into account the rod that was attached to it to kind of equal out the balance, that was probably close to another 20 pounds. So he has a weapon of war that weighed about 40 pounds probably that he was carrying with him. Yet, you know, David knew that he could beat Goliath because he knew that God was on his side. He had already done battle against a bear and a lion and came out successfully both times. Yet the Israelites didn't look toward God. They looked at Goliath's outward appearance. And if you look back at the story and think about it and how it all came down, you know, both sides were preparing for war, and the Philistines said, "Hey, you know, why should we all battle and lose a lot of lives? Why don't we just each select one warrior who will fight on our behalf?" So they had selected Goliath. If you think about it, the one that should have gone up to fight Goliath should have been Saul, because he was king at the time, and he was, you know, a head higher than anybody else that the Hebrews had. So therefore, you know, he would have been the logical one to fight. But yet he was scared of Goliath and the possible outcome. But, you know, one thing about it, as we look back, it's, even though it was a neat thing the way it happened and we know that God was involved, looking back now, we can say, hey, you know, well, if we had to fight Goliath ourselves, we would probably figure out a way that we could somehow knock him in the head to knock him out and then cut his head off with a sword. I mean, these people, other than David, weren't thinking of that at the time. They were thinking, okay, it's conventional wisdom to fight with a sword and fight with a shield. So that was the way they were approaching it rather than the way David did. Okay, we also have the issue of pride. If you think back to the religious leaders that were in power at the time when Jesus was alive, they were supposedly experts in the scriptures. You know, they studied the scriptures for a long time, and they should have known them backwards and forwards. Yet they were looking at it not from what should we do to help ourselves and help our people, but what can we do to maintain the power that we currently have so that people will follow us and respect us. This is just a few of the prophecies that were written that are in the Old Testament. The fact that the Messiah would be born in Bethlehem, the fact that he would be born of a virgin, and that he would come out of Egypt. And then also they kind of played into this because one of the prophecies was that he would be betrayed for 30 pieces of silver, which would be given for a potter's field. You know, if they would have been thinking, they should have paid 20 or 40 pieces of silver just so that they wouldn't pay the 30. Yet, you know, they really weren't looking at it from the standpoint that Jesus was the true Messiah. And then think of Malchus. And this, I almost thought about doing a lesson just on him. I thought he's kind of a neat character. But you think what must have been going through his mind, because he was the servant of the high priest, Caiaphas, and he was sent out with a group of Roman soldiers, which we don't know the exact amount, but some people estimate between maybe 300 and 600 soldiers went to go apprehend Jesus. You know, the thinking at the time was, okay, we need a large force because there's going to, you know, people are going to be fighting, they're going to be running, you know, no telling what could happen. So we're going to send out a large force to apprehend him. Yet, you know, Jesus was very passive. You know, he was ready to be apprehended and taken in. Yet Peter, you know, drew his sword and then cut off Malchus's ear. So just imagine Malchus. The first thing he probably did, he probably took his hand and probably covered his ear because it probably hurt. In that, I'm not, you know, his ear was probably laying on the ground. He probably felt that he didn't have an ear. Yet Jesus came up and healed him instantly. You know, if Malchus would have been, you know, seeing with his eyes at the time, he probably should have said, "Guys, hold off." He said, there's something to this guy. You know, he just reattached my ear or had my ear grow back. I'm not sure how it happened. But he should have said, "Let me go back and talk to Caiaphas and tell them that this guy's for real. Let's don't do this tonight." But yet he didn't. They took Jesus and they led him in to be crucified. All right, we also have reality versus perception. And then, all right, do me a favor. I promise I won't do anything up here, but close your eyes just for a minute and just imagine. I want you to imagine an island. Everybody try to picture an island. Picture your favorite island or what you would like your favorite island to look like. All right, now open them up and look at this next slide. Is this the island that you thought? No, you probably were thinking of a bigger island, right? Maybe one with a few more trees. So maybe this is what you were thinking. Okay, this is bigger. It has some more trees. But maybe somewhere where you're thinking, no, I'm thinking of the Hawaiian Islands. I want an island that has more mountains. So maybe this is what you were thinking. Now, all three of these are islands. But yet, you know, each one of you pictured something different in their mind. And let's go back to, we're talking a little bit about Moses and the parting of the Red Sea. There was a strong east wind that blew the night before. This had some direct impact on the parting of the seas, otherwise it wouldn't have been mentioned in the context. Yet this is probably the visual that you get because you've seen this picture many times of the seas parting. I can guarantee you that it didn't look quite like this. And I often wonder, maybe one of the reasons that the Israelites doubted is because it didn't look like this. Maybe because the wind did blow it out, and then when the wind stopped blowing, the waters came. But, you know, it really doesn't matter how it actually happened. The fact is that it did happen, and it happened at the time that it needed to happen. Let's look at Peter. You know, he was instructed by Christ. He was one of the 12 apostles. He was told of the kingdom. He knew it was going to come, yet he denied Christ. He denied him three times. And then, once Jesus was arrested and put to death, he basically lost all hope and said, it's over. Everything that we were planning and everything that we were hoping is now done. It wasn't until Christ's resurrection and that he saw Jesus alive again and that Jesus spent another 40 days with him that all the apostles finally go, aha, now we understand. Right. Well, some people may be blind and deaf just because they don't understand the consequence of sin. And if you look in the Bible, there's a lot of examples of sin. First of all, there's typically, now at these times, I think a lot of people, there's no immediate consequence. I think that's one of the problems that we have now. Back in the biblical times, you could see several occasions where there was an immediate consequence. And people, they don't believe in God's intolerance for sin. And like I was going to mention just now, the man picking up sticks on the Sabbath, which Kent had mentioned in his lesson this morning, that he ended up dying. If you look at Uzzah touching the Ark of the Covenant, again, he violated God's will. That ended up in death. And then Ananias and Sapphira, who were lying about what they sold the land for, they ended up being punished with death as well. Like I said, in today's society, though, we don't always have immediate repercussions for some of the things that we do. So sometimes we don't realize, you know, how much God hates it. Sometimes people have trouble grasping eternity as well. You know, how long is eternity? You know, all of you have probably heard different explanations. I heard one time where I think if a sparrow flew down from the moon and pecked the Rock of Gibraltar every 1,000 years and flew back and did it the same, it would take that long for the Rock of Gibraltar to be completely disintegrated. But even that has a definitive end, even though it may take millions or billions of years for it to occur. And also, people, I don't think, truly understand heaven or hell. This is another example of our perception. Each of us have a perception of heaven, and each of us have a perception of hell. Yet, however we perceive it, it's not going to be that way. Yet, one thing is for sure, that regardless of which one that we end up at, we'll know where we are. And we'll know that if we're in heaven, it's some place that we want to be and some place that we want to stay. And we know that if we end up in hell, we don't want to be there a second longer. Oops, I hit the wrong button, Charles. All right, there's also people that just flat out refuse to believe in God. I was over at Scott's house on New Year's Eve and met one of his neighbors. I don't know what his affiliation is as far as religious goes. His name was Rich, I think, was his name. But he's a rocket scientist. So I was talking with him, and we were talking about the universe and, you know, the speed of light and this kind of thing. And we were talking about how long it would take to travel from one end of the universe to the next. And it was billions and billions of light years to do that. It just amazes me how vast our universe is. And if you look at the Earth that we live on, and you look at how well the Earth is able to function with or without us, I mean, we could be all wiped out by disease, and 1,000 years later, you could come look at the Earth, and you probably couldn't even tell if man ever existed here, because all the buildings would have fallen down, vines and trees and everything would have grown over them. Yet the Earth is set up so that it is continuous. And you look at that and you say, well, there must have been something that created that, that was smarter than we are. Psalms 14:1 says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. So I'm asking you tonight, you know, examine your own self. Examine the things that you see and the things that you hear and decide, you know, the way... Is our perception based on what we want it to be, or is it what God wants it to be? So anyway, that basically concludes our lesson, but we do want to extend the opportunity for anyone who would like to become a member of our congregation, Lord's Church, who is not. Now's a good time to come forward and be baptized, or if there's anyone here that has done something that they would like to make public to the congregation and ask for their prayers and support, if they would do so at this time as we stand and sing.